Onu yönetimin ailesi yandığına cenab-ı sebebe çaksın sinir tenzeyni tersine suyu yürü ve iman. Sivi teytani imanı bir istansta piten zeyni bir tere sanem ve pekadana yönde dati sattı. Maalesef kalkı sevgi çağ, kırpasın nubayı ve çağ, kadir çağ, babi evyo, mayısı da evyo. After hearing the practices of yoga, the practices, the goal of yoga, and the methodology of attaining connection with the Supreme through yoga, and after hearing what Krishna just said, which was the importance of the focus of the mind and bringing the mind back under the control of the self and the value of that, and just seeing Krishna everywhere, and the very last thing that Krishna said was Atmo pamyena sarvatra samam pasyati arjuna sukam va yadiva dukam sa yogi paramonata. He is a perfect yogi who, by comparison to his own self, sees the true equality of all beings in both their happiness and their distress, O Arjuna. So he's being asked, Krishna is asking Arjuna there, when he looks out, this is 32. We're just going back to 32. When he looks out and sees, he sees everyone on an equal level. Now, when Arjuna looks out and sees, who, what does he see? What is right in front of him? Well, he's on the middle of the battlefield. So, and not only sees he sees his teachers and grandfathers, but he also sees, Yudhisthira Maharaj, and he sees Duryodhana, who is so envious and has caused so much problem. Does it mean that he's going to have such a self-controlled mind to be able to see Duryodhana the same as Yudhisthira, to see Duryodhana the same as Arjuna? A person who had tried to kill them, putting them in the house of lack and burning it up as they slept, he's supposed to see that person, Duryodhana and Dushasana, who insulted Draupadi, to see them equally, control one's mind with spiritual vision in that way. So Arjuna's response is, O Madhusudan, the system of yoga which you have summarized appears impractical and unendurable. I cannot do this to me because the mind is restless and unsteady. How am I how will I be able to control my mind to that degree, to have this type of vision? So Prabhupada in his purport agrees with this. It says 5,000 years ago, Arjuna had much better facility than we do now, yet he refused to accept this system of yoga. In fact, we do not find any record in history of his practicing it at any time. Therefore, this system must be considered generally impossible in the age of Kali. To pull one's mind back to practice yoga to such a degree, because the center is the mind, to pull it back to Pratyahara, pull it back from all engagement with the senses and then focus it within, move it from the outside world to the Lord in the heart. That's what yoga means. It's not just the stretching the body and the asanas so one becomes healthy. It's very good for health. So, but it's not so good for achieving the Supreme Lord, because no one gets past the asana part. They don't even go through the yam and the niyam either, the rules and regulations, just right to the asana and stop there. So for people in general, it's an impossible proposal in the age of Kali. It may be possible for some very few rare men. So there are yogis who still practice, or like from a different age. But for the people in general, it's an impossible proposal. If this was so 5,000 years ago, then what of the present day? Those who are imitating this yoga system in different so-called schools and societies, although complacent, although thinking that they're doing the right thing, are certainly wasting their time. They are completely in ignorance of the desired goal. Arjuna continues saying, first he says this is not practical, and then he says why it's not practical, because chanchalam hi mana krishna pramatti balavad dridam, that the mind is chanchal. What does chanchal mean? Flickering. It's always moving from here to here to here to here. Just try and stop it. Hi mana, this mind, certainly this mind is always moving, flickering. Chanchalam hi mana krishna, that defines the mind in Kali Yuga. It's always flickering. Chanchala hi mana krishna pramata means it's always churning and it's agitated. And that's what Sri Patanjali says about the purpose of yoga. Is yoga, what? Chitta vritti nirodha. To stop, not the mind, but stop all the different movements of the mind, the churning of the mind. Chitta vritti means the flickering of the consciousness, or the changing perceptions of the consciousness, nirodha, to quiet it and make it stop the churning. So he's defining what the mind is like. Chanchalam hi mana krishna pramati balavad jidam tasyaham. Oh, it is balavad. Not only is it always agitated and churning, it's balavad. It is very strong. And jidam, it is fixed in what it's doing. It doesn't want to stop. So it's always agitated, churning, and fixed in being in this way. And strong. So how am I going to do what you just said? Tasyaham nigraham manye vaya eva sudushkaram. Subduing it, I think, to control the mind is more difficult than vaya eva sudushkaram. It's more difficult than controlling the wind. How do you stop the wind? You say stop, and it just goes around you. So Prabhupada's translation, the mind is restless, turbulent, obstinate, and very strong, O Krishna. And to subdue it, I think, is more difficult than controlling the wind. Prabhupada says in his purport, artificially, one may establish a mental equilibrium toward both friend and enemy, but ultimately no worldly man can do so. But this is more difficult than controlling the raging wind. So this is what Krishna was asking Arjuna to do. And there on the battlefield, how are you going to, if you see that your friends and enemies is the same, what will you do if you're on the battlefield? Who will you shoot? So now Krishna's going to answer. What do you think he's going to say? The mind is like this, what to do about it? Huh? Well, now we shall hear what he says. First thing, he agrees with him. Asam Sayam, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Asam Sayam, without a doubt, Mahabaho, O powerful armed one, Mano, Dur Nigraham Charam, without a doubt, Asam Sayam, all-powerful one, almighty arm one. The mind is dunigraha, very difficult to control and flickering. Chanchalam, dunigraham chalam. But, abhyasya too, two means but, abhyas means what? Practice. By practice, kauntea. So Krishna's calling Arjuna kauntea and mahabaho, and vairagya cha griyate. Griyate means it can be controlled by vairagya and abhyas, practice and detachment. So Krishna agrees with Arjuna, but he says, but still it can be controlled by these things. So here's Prabhupada's translation. Lord Sri Krishna said, O mighty armed son of Kunti, it is undoubtedly very difficult to curb, means to control, the restless mind, but it is possible by suitable practice and by detachment. The difficulty, here's Prabhupada's purport, of controlling the obstinate mind, as expressed by Arjuna, is accepted by the personality of Godhead. So Krishna agrees with it. Oh, this mind. This is the same thing that the Avanti Brahmana says in the 11th canto, that the only problem really that we have is our minds. But at the same time, while accepting it, he suggests that by practice and detachment, it is possible. So we have weakness usually in practice and in detachment. And if we don't practice and we are not detached, then it is impossible to control the wild, crazy mind. So practice and detachment. Practice and detachment, it is possible. And what is the practice? What is that practice? In the present age, no one can observe the strict rules and regulation of placing oneself in a sacred place, focusing the mind on the super soul, restraining the senses and mind, observing celibacy, remaining alone, etc. By the practice of Krishna consciousness, however, one engages in 9 types of devotional service, because that type of practice is a complete pulling back from the world and from engaging the senses in anything except within. But in Krishna consciousness, everything is engaged based on Krishna, on the 9 practices, Navanga Bhakti. And then one can deal with the world through that frame of reference of service to Krishna and glorification of Krishna. By the practice of Krishna consciousness, however, one engages in 9 types of devotional service to the Lord. The first and foremost of such devotional engagements is hearing about Krishna. This is a very powerful transcendental method for purging the mind of all misgivings. That means the mind is purified by hearing about Krishna from the Bhagavad Gita, from Srimad Bhagavatam. And then all the misgivings are removed gradually. The more one hears about Krishna, the more one becomes enlightened and detached from everything that draws the mind away from Krishna. By detaching the mind from activities not devoted to the Lord, one can very easily learn vairagya, detachment. Vairagya means detachment from matter and engagement of the mind and spirit. And Krishna calls Arjuna Mahabaho. What does Mahabaho mean? Mighty armed. Because if you can conquer that one enemy of the mind, then you are really mighty armed. You are really the most powerful of warriors. But you are Kaunteya. He calls them 2 names in this, Mahabaho and Kaunteya. But you are Kaunteya. You are my cousin. We have our relationship. And I will help you. Oh, Kaunteya, we have our relationship. for one whose mind, so should we undergo the trouble, the abhyas and vairagya required? For one whose mind is unbridled, in other words, uncontrolled, self-realization is difficult work. Have any of you ever had that experience? I have. That unless our mind, we want to go this way with our mind, we want to go this way in our devotional service, and the mind says, sorry, we're going this way. but, no, we're going this way. Who's in control here, me or you, my mind? You'll see. We're going this way, and we end up going that way. Very heavy, this mind is very, very, very heavy. And we can make 100 sankalpas, 1,000 determinations, and then the mind will say, oh yes, yes, I'll do everything, I'll be very good. And then one day, we're going this way. Does this sometimes happen to, even to you?
Yeah.
Yeah? Once? Twice?
Yeah.
More?
More.
Me also, because I'm older. So even more times I've been embarrassed and humiliated in my seemingly good intentions have been destroyed by this rascal, powerful mind, which is durvigna, so difficult to control, that is so obstinate. Obstinate means, it says, I want to do it, balavat, I want to do it, I don't care. So one whose mind is unbridled, what's the word, what does it mean, unbridled? What is the meaning? Why does it say unbridled?
You bridle a horse to control
it. Yeah. Bridle means the thing you put in the horse's mouth and the reins. And with that, pull back, and you can control the horse with that. So if one's mind doesn't have any facility to be controlled, it will go anywhere and everywhere. Just like practically the best example is if you put a young child in the Toys R Us store, and the child is guaranteed to go crazy and will end up crying and miserable. I haven't been in one in so long, maybe I should go in just to see. But you always see this when the parents have their children in stores, and the children so many times end up crying because they want everything. They want everything. And then the war takes place between the parents and the mother and the child. The child says, give me this, give me this, give me this. And then the mother says, be quiet. There's so many people. Shh. Just be good. And the child says, if you don't give me what I want, it doesn't say it. But if you don't give me what I want, I'm going to embarrass you. I'm going to start crying in public. Have you ever seen a child do that? Have you? In the stores? You? Have you? Who? And it's politics, right? It's war. I'm going to cry in public. And then the mother goes, rum, and then the child starts crying. The war, the first blow is that, then the war starts, and the child, and the mother says, stop that, and the child gets louder, because the war is escalating. And then the child does the ultimate thing, maybe they throw themselves on the ground, and kicking, and crying, and then the mother starts picking them up, and everyone in the store is looking. And then everyone's thinking, what a terrible child, what a terrible mother. So who has won this battle? The child didn't get what he wanted, and the mother is embarrassed too. So both have lost. That's what happens when the mind is unbridled. Everyone loses. Everyone loses. There are no winners except for Maya. So for one whose mind is unbridled, self-realization is difficult work, because you're moving forward towards Krishna, and then at the same time you're moving back away from Krishna, and then you move forward and then you move back. towards Maya, back and forth, and you don't get anywhere. It's so disturbing. Then you get discouraged. Oh, never make any progress. Oh. But he whose mind is controlled, so here the mind is central, and who strives by appropriate means is assured of success. That is my opinion. So Prabhupada says, we'll read Prabhupada's purport here. The Supreme Personality of Godhead declares that one who does not accept the proper treatment to detach the mind from material engagement. Did you really do that? Yeah. Did you get what you want? Who won the battle?
You win. Many times.
Huh?
Sometimes me, sometimes me.
That was a long time ago, right? Not like a few weeks ago, or like when you went back to. The Supreme Personality of Godhead declares that one who does not accept the proper treatment to detach the mind from material engagement can hardly achieve success in self-realization. Because we tend to think that the purpose of self-realization of Krishna consciousness is to give us the material pleasures that we wanted, the material happiness that we wanted. So we tend not to become detached. So, but unless we do, we cannot get success in self-realization. We may be able to go to the heavenly planets even. The weather is so nice there, and the heavenly planets, so nice. So many nice things are there. Do you want to go? There's no school in the heavenly planets. Everyone automatically knows. And because there's no school, there's no teachers. It gives you trouble. And everything just happens. You think about things, good things, they just appear before you. Pretty good, huh? But Krishna's not there. Trying to practice yoga while engaging the mind in material enjoyment is like trying to ignite a fire while pouring water on it. So what will happen if we try to light a fire and at the same time pour water on it? The fire certainly will not ignite. It will not burst into flames. Yoga practice without mental control is a waste of time. Such a show of yoga may be materially lucrative, you may be able to make money from it, but it is useless as far as spiritual realization is concerned. Therefore, one must control the mind by engaging it constantly in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. So here is the process that is the process of bhakti for controlling the mind. Always engage the mind, constantly engage the mind in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Accepting that I am Krishna's servant and servant of Srila Prabhupada, and engaging the mind always in increasing that service and perfecting that service and how to please. Whatever situation I'm in now, how to please Krishna through that. A Krishna conscious person, unless one is engaged in Krishna consciousness, he cannot steadily control the mind. So what that means, if we're not engaged constantly in Krishna consciousness, we cannot steadily control our mind. If we're engaged sometimes in Krishna consciousness and sometimes in trying an enjoyment consciousness or something else, the mind will be raising out of control. A Krishna conscious person easily achieves the result of yoga practice without separate endeavor because he's focused on Krishna. That is the result of yoga practice. But a yoga practitioner cannot achieve success without becoming Krishna conscious. So on all paths, this abhyas and vairagya are needed. Practice and detachment from matter so one can focus on what is truly beneficial for one, what is truly pleasurable even on Krishna. So Arjuna then, after he hears this, he asks an interesting question. Because after hearing that you must do this, and this is the way to do it, by Abhyas, he says, what happens if I don't do very well? What happens if I try my best, but either due to my weakness in practice or my inability to be fully detached, what will happen to me if I fail and don't achieve the supreme result? Because then I will neither be on the spiritual, but I won't be in the material realm either. What will happen to me? Will I don't exist anymore? That was what he's going to ask next. And Krishna's will answer that question. But before we go to that, anyone have any questions about what we talked about about the mind and the process?
Does it mean a person who is still envious can never control his mind?
That's one of the things it means. Why would being envious stop one from controlling one's mind? Why would being envious stop one from controlling one's mind?
Kind of a negative approach towards you yourself.
Envious of who? Of anything. So what does it mean to be envious of anything? Definitely was a symptom of that. But why does envy, what does envy have to do with controlling the mind? What is envy? What is the emotion of envy?
That emotion will sort of infiltrate the mind.
What does it mean, first of all? What does envy mean? Why are you envious of someone?
Wanting something that you don't have.
Or he has something that you don't think he should have, and basically you want it. But someone has something that you think he shouldn't have. Yeah, that's true, but let's slowly get there. Because the point is that not slowly get to envy of Krishna, but slowly get to that understanding. So someone has something that I don't think that person should have, and I want it. So first of all, you want something material, or you're thinking something even spiritual. Sometimes we see someone who's advanced spiritually and we become envious of them. So, what does envy feel like? What does envy feel like?
Painful.
Very painful. Okay. It's hard to describe, yeah, it's overwhelming. What does it feel like? Of course, you wouldn't know.
Anger.
Huh? Anger, and you don't wish well for that person. Hard to describe what it feels like. But it's very powerful. It's very pointed. You want to hurt someone practically. You're not well-wishing that person. So by definition, your mind isn't controlled. It's out of control when you're envious. And then the point comes, of course, that if our mind is thinking that someone else has something that we want, we're never going to be happy in this world, because there's always going to be, the only way we could be happy if we're envious is if no one has anything that we don't want them to have. No one in the world is allowed to have anything that I don't want them to have. Can you imagine if that was what it took to make you happy? That no one in this world is allowed to have anything that I don't want them to have. And I'm the one who decides who gets what, and of course I'll take the best of everything. So if that's what it takes to make me happy, I'm certainly the only person who can be happy is the one who controls everything and everyone. And Krishna, of course, is, he has everything. So that, as you were pointing out, all that envy naturally goes to Krishna. If we're envious of this person because he has something, just imagine how envious we are of Krishna. What's the opposite of envy? Wishing well for others, self-satisfaction, peacefulness. So these are the qualities that are born of a godly nature, that are beneficial, born of goodness. So your question was, does envy cause a uncontrolled mind, or is it the result of an uncontrolled mind? Maybe both. Thank you. Any other questions or comments?
Prabhupada recommended that the mind must be engaged in the transcendental, constantly engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord.
But wait, there was some, but read the whole sentence.
Therefore, one must control the mind by engaging it constantly in the transcendental loving service of the Lord.
And then the next sentence?
Unless one is engaged in Krishna consciousness, he cannot steadily control the mind.
So what sort of put that, those two statements together, and what was Prabhupada saying?
That the mind must be engaged in service, that service must be in Krishna consciousness.
If one wants to control the mind. And it's not possible to control the mind otherwise. Okay, now what's...
Well, that sort of makes one feel a little like it's a very high...
Yeah.
Because we see that we try to engage the mind in service, but it's definitely not in transcendental loving service, conscious of Krishna.
Yes. And therefore we get the results that are mixed. So then one could think it's such a high platform and I'm not qualified to be on that platform, and one could get discouraged. But Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains in one purport in, perhaps in the 10th canto, that even though we really can't meditate on Krishna, from a conditioned state, we look at Krishna, we look at Krishna's form, and we think, so beautiful, he's so beautiful, I'm meditating on him, but Krishna's form is transcendental, it's something completely different. So one could get discouraged, thinking, well, I'm not really perceiving Krishna when I look at Krishna, and I'm just perceiving something of the material world, practically speaking, because my mind is like that. That's its capacity. Vishwanath explains also that, but Krishna sees that, oh, my devotee is meditating on me, and he's pleased, and he benedicts the devotee. So similarly, although the stage of Krishna consciousness is perhaps much higher, which is the stage required to control the mind really, is much higher than we have the capacity to attain, our attempt is pleasing to Krishna, and then Krishna benedicts us by his mercy, as he so desires. All because we can't do it by our own power, but we can make our attempt, and if we don't make the attempt, that Krishna has no impetus to assist us, because we're not expressing our desire.
So the proper application in the process is very high, but we're meant to stay on sincerity by making the appropriate
endeavor. And then, yeah, we should know what the ideal standard is.
Yeah.
there's this thing about there's this principle that Krishna doesn't interfere with our free will, and he has no impetus to do anything if we're not doing anything. And sometimes we talk about Krishna making arrangements. Does Krishna actually make arrangements, even though he won't directly interfere with our free will?
That's
how we look at it.
When we say that Krishna doesn't interfere with our free will, when we mean that he's completely neutral in dealing with us, that's for non-devotees. That he describes in the 9th chapter, Samaham Savabhuteshu Namedveshastina Priya. Then he says, Ye Bhajanti Tumam Bhaktya. But who's worshipping in devotion, Maya Chitesha Chapyaham. That I have specially within him, and he's living specially within me. So, for the devotees, and Prabhupada explains, either it's in that purport or another one, that it's like there's an owner of a factory, and maybe his son is working in the factory, and he's equal to everyone in the factory, but he's giving some special considerations to his son. Naturally, it's natural. So, when we say that Krishna is neutrally towards everyone and doesn't interfere with everyone, we're not speaking about devotees in that way. But still, even with devotees, he doesn't interfere with their free will in the sense that he doesn't force us, but he makes arrangements so that we learn to apply our free will properly and learn the proper lessons. When we try to get closer to him, Yayatamam Prapadyante, he also tries to get closer to us. So he does.
Does that apply equally to a very new devotee who's sometimes thinking of getting closer to Krishna, but a lot of the time is distracted by other desires?
Ask the question again. What was the first part of it?
A lot of
what is the first part of the question?
It doesn't apply equally.
Okay, no, it doesn't apply equally. Mm-hmm. But it applies to them too, but not equally. Mm-hmm. Because the devotee who is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, Krishna is fully absorbed in thinking of that devotee. So it's proportional to the amount of surrender, basically. As Prabhupada has explained that also. So the more we're sincerely trying, then the more Krishna has the facility to take it, more our gate is open to allow his hand into our life. But yet Krishna sitting there, okay, you're 1.34%, and therefore I reciprocate with you 1.34%. Rather it's, okay, you're at 1.3428%, and I reciprocate 10 times as much as that. Something like that more. And it comes to the degree in Krishna's reciprocation, like the residents of Vrindavan give 100%, and the Vraja Gopis give so much. But Krishna doesn't even know how to reciprocate with them because he reciprocates more than they give, but he can't reciprocate and he remains forever in their debt. That's the conclusion of Lord Brahma. He says, if you reciprocate with Putana, who came to you with this much bhakti, or hidden fake bhakti, and you gave so much to Putana in reciprocation, then how are you going to reciprocate with the residents of Vrindavan? Can't. So he remains under their control and in their debt. Because you remain under the control of someone who you're in debt to.
Um, Another question. Krishna doesn't declare that free will, yet if one...
the general principle. Yes, go ahead.
If somebody is conditioning on our behalf, somebody who has a very high level of bhakti conditioning on our behalf, that we may be benefited, but our free will is not so strong. What if the...
Our free will is very strong, always.
In the wrong direction. But they're interceding with Krishna. What is the... How does he reciprocate with both? Our free will is still closed to him, but somebody is wishing our advancement and praying on our behalf.
Are you asking this from the point of view of Krishna? How should I do this? Getting to, so we can advise Krishna how to deal with it?
No.
Or from the point of view of the...
I'm trying to understand the mechanics of how it works. If my free will is not surrendered to Krishna fully, but say Srila Prabhupada or someone like that is praying to Krishna, interceding on our behalf or whatever you want to call it, but my free will isn't up to a full acceptance of Krishna's mercy, what is the... How does that... What is Krishna's silly question, I guess, in a way, what is his policy in
I'm agreeing.
Because one
what is his policy?
Will, one person's free will is that you should be benefited, and your free will doesn't seek your benefit.
Well, why don't we just take it out of, take Krishna out of it for a second, and say if Prabhupada really, really wants you to be a devotee. And we saw Prabhupada really wanted so many people to be devotees. And some became devotees, and some didn't. And some came and left, and some came and stayed in a particular way, and some did many things. So there's certainly the element of free will that always remains there. And Prabhupada gave the example of the lectures that Prabhupada gave in, I think it was in Los Angeles in 1968, he asked one devotee, a young boy, maybe Birbhadra, asked Prabhupada, why do you favor Tamal so much? Meaning Tamal Krishnaraj. And Prabhupada said, no, I'm equal to everyone. Like the sun is equal to everyone. But if one person may be in the house, and the sun is right there, and he closes the curtains, and he closes the windows, and turns off everything. And then Prabhupada said, what can the sun do? But another person, the sun is there, they open the curtains, they go outside, they bask in the sunlight, and then they get the benefit of the sun, but the sun is being equal to everyone. So the question is, can the sun do any more to get someone outside? So the sun, in this case, he can, and he does. He tries to entice people to come outside. Prasadam, kirtan, this and that. But if a person is very obstinate, what can the sun do? Does that answer your question?
Then that really also magnifies the glorification of the in the Dhammadrastikam, you know, of the Narada's mercy to the sons of Kuvera.
So the saintly curse also becomes a benediction? But it took them a long time living as trees, because they were there long before Krishna's pastime began. For hundreds of years, I don't remember how many, but a long, long, long time. But once you're out in the sun, then the time you waited to get out in the sun doesn't seem very long. You just know that you're going to remain in the sun. Light. Like if you described in the Bhagavatam, if you have a long journey and it's so troublesome, first you get in the taxi and then you have to go to the airport and then you have to pass through the security and then you have to sit on the plane scrumped up for so long, and then you get off the plane and then you have to go for immigration and customs and you're tired and you haven't slept properly, and then you get in the taxi and then you get to Vrindavan and then you're happy. And you forget the difficulties of the journey when you arrive at your destination. That's described in the Bhagavatam.